Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka, welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us today is Ms. Louisa Mojola, Group CEO of Whiphold, and Ms. Gloria Sirobe, Chief Executive Officer of Whip Capital. Whiphold is dedicated to the empowerment of women with business interests primarily focused on mining, infrastructure, and financial services. Let me introduce our guests to you briefly. Ms. Louisa Mojola is a founder and group CEO of Whiphold. She holds a BCom from the National University of Lesotho and completed the Executive Leadership Program at Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. Ms. Mojola serves on several boards, including Distell, Sun International, ABB South Africa, Sasol Mining, and Life Healthcare Group Holdings. She has won several accolades, including being recognized as one of South Africa's most influential women in business and government in 2008, and being awarded the 2009 inaugural African Business Leadership Award in Dakar, Senegal, by the African Development Bank. Ms. Gloria Sirobe is a founding member and executive director of Whiphold and CEO of Whip Capital. She obtained a BCom degree from the University of Transkei and holds an MBA degree from Rutgers University, New Jersey, USA. She serves on several boards, including Old Mutual, Nedbank, Hans Morensky, and Sasol Mining. She is the chairman of the Board of Independent Ports Regulator. She is an honorary member of the Actuarial Society of South Africa and is a member of the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants Advisory Council. Ms. Sirobe has also won numerous awards, including the Businesswoman Associates Corporate Businesswoman of the Year in 2006. Welcome to the show, ladies. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, in 1999, Whiphold became the first women's group to be listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. You have already broken glass ceilings, which paves the way for other women to follow in your footsteps. Please, will you walk us through a few of the landmarks in your careers?
I think if we just look at Whiphold, one of our biggest milestones was creating Whiphold itself. Because this was created in 1994, just at the dawn of the democracy in South Africa.
So you're celebrating 20 years this
we
year?
We had a big celebration in March in Sun City. The two of us were working for Standard Corporate and Merchant Bank, and we could see, you know, how wealth is created. She was in the corporate finance, where she was one of the many executives that put transactions together. That primarily is what motivated us, that but we can do it for ourselves. But the critical thing also that we agreed on from the very beginning was that it will not serve as well and the democracy of this country if we were just to establish Whiphold for ourselves. We agreed from the very beginning that if we can do it for the women of this country, because we all come from a history where we were, you know, historically disadvantaged. As many of us were first-time investors, because you will pretty much appreciate that historically, black women were only exposed to savings and, of course, our famous stock fails. So maybe I'll stop there and give Gloria a chance.
I think the other thing that we added there was that the struggle for the women, lack of emancipation, was not only black women. And so we opened the whole process to both black and white women. We might differ the degrees and intensity of that gender problem historically, but in the end, the women, both of them, have been found wanting in terms of being included in opportunities.
And ultimately, with Whiphold, you're dedicated to the empowerment of women.
Yes.
The second milestone for us was our IPO. This was the first initial public offer that was open to the women in this country, both black and white, as Gloria says, but predominantly to women only, because we were trying to address the very same issue that Gloria is highlighting, that whereas as black women, we had a double-edged discrimination, racial and gender, and white women had the gender discrimination. But collectively, we were historically disadvantaged compared to our male counterpart. So this IPO was opened to every woman from urban, peri-urban, and rural. And for us to be able to get to that point, we started with the workshops, which were very, very critical in these whole nine provinces of the country.
Can you expand on the workshops? Well, the workshops ran over 2 years because we first had to make sure that the women know that we are doing what we're doing. We must prepare them for this. And there was a large element of it, which was education, because we were saying we were trying to bring people who were never given access to investment opportunities. So we covered the nine provinces. But the other thing was that because we're Gauteng-based, it's not everywhere where we were known. We're also young professionals still. And so we started our workshop first with what was senior women leaders of the time, who were hugely respected. So people like Joyce Roke, Mamlea Tutu, Gabashe, those were stalwarts of the country. And once we were endorsed by them, it made a big difference when we went out, because in places where we were not known, at least they knew the endorsers as the women who are usually respected in the country. Given that we're looking at some point in time, we will take people's money, it was important that there is integrity in what we're doing and that people trust that you won't have four Gauteng girls coming, taking their money off the run with it. So that's how the workshop. So by the time we came back to them in 1996 for the IPO, we had done that preparation work for them. Quite a costly exercise, of course, but it was a necessary one.
Well, it was a great investment to start everything up so that people were educated, they knew what they were getting into, and establishing your reputation and also utilising the influencer strategy of existing leadership to get the buy-in with the public.
Yeah. And what was important also that process was many of the BEEs of the day, they were being funded without putting any of their risk money on the table. So for us it was important that we show our commitment to these investments that we're going to be negotiating. I mean, ordinary women at the time raising 25 million from their own pocket was a resounding success insofar as we're concerned.
Absolutely.
So we were quite excited. And the excitement of that IPO, people filling in their forms, didn't talk about the affidavit.
The IPO is a public process. So you cannot stop somebody coming to participate legally. But what we did was, in that prospectus, we also had an affidavit. That affidavit, women participants would have to confirm that they are women.
Oh, so declaring their gender in case men were coming through to try to buy the shares and participate.
Exactly.
And so with that affidavit, then they would get two types of shares. If you don't have the affidavit, you wouldn't have the two types of shares. And the other share that these women were getting was the controlling share as well, over and above the more value to them for free.
But the men were quite supportive, really, on behalf of their wives. And they were just amused by this idea of an affidavit, because they knew that that affidavit was really, in a sense, going to control their participation. That even if they sneak in, because we had a B and A shares, as Gloria says, and the B shares were the participating shares that you can buy, trade, buy or sell, and the A shares were put in a special vehicle called the Weipold Investment Trust, because those shares, we actually call them units, they were not paid for. But for participating in the B IPO shares, the women were rewarded at no cost by being given the same number of units for what they had participated or subscribed for. So they actually got a double investment.
Mm. Well, I think it was an excellent way of putting in a control mechanism.
And it was also a control mechanism because it had veto rights, it had more voting power than the B shares, because our view was, as a company and we grow, at some point we may want to list, as indeed we did list, but we did not want to lose that power base of women, because in a sense, you invest in order to grow your investment and sell at a later point. So, but with the investment trust, they were nicely locked in there. All that the investment trust was going to do for them, as it grows and it has capital or profit, it distributes, but was not allowed to sell. So were permanent shareholders who were women, which worked for us, because at any given time, even today, 20 years later, we still can proudly talk about our 18,000 women shareholders who have walked this journey with us.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Chaka Chaka, the United Nations Goodwill Ambassador on Malaria in Africa. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. Today we are talking to WIPHOLD founding members, Ms. Louisa Mojela, Group CEO of WIPHOLD, and Ms. Gloria Tomato Sirobe, Chief Executive Officer of WIP Capital. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at WomanityTalk. Now, picking up on our discussion, you have made a significant contribution to the future growth and development of our economy and have really been instrumental role models for many women and girls. But going through the course, and as you've indicated, looking at different control mechanisms of how to make sure that we had women who were participating in the initial public share offering, what gender challenges did you encounter and how did you overcome them?
Well, the main gender challenge which will always be there is that the gender problem is not a South African problem, it's worldwide.
Absolutely.
And so the issue of women taking themselves seriously in business that really the captains of industries don't think they belong there is always going to remain a challenge. We have encountered it in South Africa openly and obviously in other places, irritating sometimes, but the point is, even though we expected it, every time it happens you get shocked. Having said that, we have also experienced positive support from men, successful captains of industry at the same time. So what we have to tell the women, the generation behind us, is that expect both. There are men who are very keen to support and make it work. And there are men who are still overwhelmed by the possibility of this. And we're not going to spend a lot of time educating those. We're just going to spend time maybe with the ones that are positive and move on, because in the end, the journey itself is quite long. We need some critical mass, and it's going to take us a long time to get to that critical mass that we think is necessary to make the impact that we think the world needs to have.
So your focus has been on the positive,
yeah,
and to encourage people who have already had the buy-in to hopefully cascade onto other people who need to acquire the buy-in.
And there's lots of them. There's quite a number of those types of successful captains of industry who think, and the reason they are successful is because the issue of women is not an emotional one. It is a case of truly you need the human infrastructure to do the things that countries are looking for. So in a case like South Africa, where we are developing and emerging and all that kind of thing, so to exclude that kind of size of human power from making it happen, it's truly a case of captains of industry being short-sighted and lacking the leadership and the vision to move on and make things happen. But as I'm saying, it's all over the world. and you are going to get these two sets of people, and we have to accept that.
And dealing with the situation as it comes.
And if I may also add to that, that yes, you will continue to have this mixed bag of those that are supportive and those that are not so supportive. Of all the BEEs that started in 1994, we remain one of the few that still exist. And those that have been swallowed or dissipated were men that were a creation of these captains of industries at the exclusion, obviously, of women, because they thought there was more value in bringing these men businesses on board as opposed to women. One of the key things about Wipold is that whereas all investment, we are looking for profits and wealth creation, I think for us, we actually put the empowerment of women ahead of everything else. The profits and the wealth creation were a subsector of us bringing the women on board as investors, as creators of wealth. Because we based our vision on the premise that says women are the largest contributors of labor in the market, and they are the largest consumers of goods and services in the market.
And therefore, it's about 70% of
consumers. And therefore, the challenge was for us as women to galvanize ourselves and convert our purchasing power into investment opportunities.
And given the longevity that you've had, the 20 years of experience that you've accumulated and you've gone through challenges and various successes, in your opinion, what areas do you think still need attention with respect to women?
I guess the biggest area that is still a challenge is pretty much what Gloria just articulated, that also as women, we must decide whether we really want to play this game of entrepreneurship. We are cognizant, yes, we are mothers, and yes, we've got careers to establish and build, yet there's entrepreneurship opportunities that are there. If there is one thing that we can all talk positively about this South African government is to create an enabling environment for the black economic empowerment players to come on board, and in particular women. Because if you look at all these BEE scores, you score higher if you are a woman. So there are more opportunities, really. We just need to organize ourselves, be bold, and come forward.
So it's moving people out of their comfort zones.
Absolutely.
And going wholeheartedly into an entrepreneurial or business venture.
Being a pioneer is problematic. That one failure of yours is used for everybody as a proxy. For every woman business that comes behind, oh, you know them, they'll take people's money, all they've got, and go shopping.
They interest themselves.
So we carry that burden of being pioneers so that the ones behind us do not have to explain our errors and spend more time on that.
But being in the pioneering space is incredibly important, and being first to market, you provide the example for the rest of the organizations, for other women moving through the business world to look up to. Now, Mr. Robert, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about gender equality as being a global issue, and it is definitely increasingly a global focus. We've had South Africa's Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill, which is currently undergoing its more consultations and various reviews, but its principal aim is about being able to promote and achieve equality for women across the board. Do you think that legislation will help improve the gender gaps?
Legislation can only improve the gender gaps, mindful at the same time that legislation is only meant to enable. And so it is always going to come back to the business owners, the senior leadership, whether of politics or of government or of business, to do the right thing. Let me just say, it's good to have a bill, but I would be surprised if the jails of South Africa were to be filled up by CEOs of top 40 companies who have not complied with this bill. I don't think so. So in the end, it's a balancing act between having the bill and getting into the conscience of people that it is the right thing to do. The second thing is that at the same time around this, we're balancing something that says, while we are addressing the gender problem around women, we also have to carry the men along.
Yes.
We have to carry the boys along. And so you'll find that, for example, for me, taking girl to work, for example, it's okay, I've never been a big fan of that, because I don't know what happens to these boys in the meantime.
Her biasness is also based on the fact that she's got boys in her house.
I only have boys in my house. So the 10-year-old today cannot be accused of benefiting from the gender bias towards men. I'm just saying, we have to stress a lot on the coexistence of men and women. We are fighting for coexistence.
Well, I think there's a nice phrase that means gender mainstreaming, which is about looking at the differences as well as the similarities that we bring to the table. Because the fact is, fundamentally, we are different.
And recognize the existence of women. This is really what has been the issue. The beauty about WePod is that all the founders only have boys. As much as she is accusing me of having boys, she too has. And so is Wendy, and so is Nomsha. None of us have an experience of having girls as children. So, and all four of us are married. So in a way, 24 hours are surrounded by men and boys and all of that. So we don't have the capacity to be so angry against men to the extent of being destructive. What we are looking for is this balance, this coexistence, the recognition that women are there and that they too can make a difference, especially for the economy of South Africa, beyond just consuming and giving labor. They can make a difference in running businesses. We are building a cement plant now. And it's a boys' world. It's a place of guys.
Yes.
A place of guys. And we're going to build a cement which is like any other cement. It's not going to be a girl cement. We're going to build a cement to build buildings and bridges and roads and mill, all of that. We're quite comfortable to be in that space because we think we belong there. We resent the fact that that sector doesn't think we belong there. Having said that, it's not in our interest to replace that sector with just women. We just want to be there because we belong there. And that is really the fight and the war that you are busy with.
And this is where, again, you see the differences between men and women. Men will be happy just to be there by themselves and enjoy whatever the good that comes with it. Women will always, as she says, have that nurturing spirit in them to say, no, we need to coexist. We need to come together. We deserve to be empowered, all of us, not just one sector of the human race. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, an ambassador for the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. Today we are talking to WePod founding members, Ms. Louisa Morgella, Group CEO of WePod, and Ms. Gloria Tomato Sorobe, Chief Executive Officer of WePod Capital. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now picking up on our discussion, one of the points that you both raised is the issue between motherhood and juggling a career, and that's always been a controversial issue. How do you see this, and is there a fine line between being able to manage everything?
It's always a question that we get from young professionals. I'll give you two answers. One is negative and one is positive. The negative one is the one that says, I'm not so sure this question, why it is not meted out to men. As a climb up the corporate ladder, so are they juggling work and family and home. So the challenge is on both. Of course, the challenge is more severe on women because we are expected to do more at home than men can get away with.
They don't fall pregnant also.
They don't fall pregnant, and so the cooking is left in our laps and
the domestic
and
duties.
Domestic duties and stuff like that. My response to this is that, you know, thanks to Woolworths and them, they've even decided to cut our vegetables for us. They just take it from the plastic and just throw it into the pot and go and watch TV also. There's some kind of accommodation that on the domestic chores, there is some facilitation of some sort. But the main thing for us though, as a women, in South Africa, unlike the rest of the world, we do have extended family arrangements.
In Africa, generally.
The grandmothers here are desperately wanting to have these grandchildren with them. And whereas in the first world, it's different. So we have the infrastructure that others don't have.
It's a huge support
it's
network.
It's a huge support
and
network.
Can afford to help us.
And so we can have the domestic help and so on and so on. So it shouldn't have the kind of tension that we have if we use that properly and back yourself up with that kind of system. But there's always a guilt factor for women. If you can't go to your child's sports a thing, or she's singing at night now and you are not there, we feel guilty about that. I have also found that children are much more reasonable than we do make them to be.
As mothers, I had an interesting dialogue a few weeks ago with Angie Mosheko, President of the African National Congress, Women's League, and also Minister of Basic Education. And one of the things that she shared was her upbringing as a child and the role that her mother played in terms of shaping her views and ultimately her future achievements. And the issues of mothers has been a theme which has been repeated by a very strong woman that have featured on the program with an element that keeps reoccurring, and that is about discipline. What's your intake on this?
I think if you look at our generation, we all come from the upbringing of mothers who instilled serious, serious discipline within all of us. And the nice thing then was that the discipline was not only instilled by our parents or mothers. At school, the discipline was also there to be instilled by the teachers. Within your street, any adult had the right to instill that discipline.
And then the child automatically and the had child respect.
Had to respect. We were the children of the community. It's a little bit different now because, you know, children today will tell about their democratic rights, which we grew up not knowing. So it's quite a challenge.
And those slippers will be used to beat you up. And you never ran to the police station to say we've been abused. So it's a bit of a different world, a modern one. But I can't help to think, though, that a child does need somebody that they are afraid of. Not in a negative sense, but you cannot have a reference point where the last word comes from somebody. But we're learning, because that's a modern world now. We come from the old one. I think there was an assumption of a good parent, and really that's what. So maybe with the life being modern and all of that, there's some transition about this parenting thing.
We live in different circumstances, and the other factor is that we're no longer an isolated geography. Yeah. Everything that people do now is globally connected.
There's internet and the computers. Everybody. Mm. I also just wanted to make another contribution on the juggling.
Please do.
Because in my view also, one of the points that I think, particularly as black women, we must be cognizant of not creating a bad legacy to those that are coming after us. You are finding more and more
professional women who just decide to be house mothers. And in my view, I think that they still have a lot to contribute to the society, because every time we say, I mean, the corporate South Africa says, no, we don't have capable blacks to appoint either as directors, as to the boards or as CEOs. Meanwhile, we've got a wonderful reservoir of these women with this talent who decide that, no, we just want to be housewives.
They're denying their potential.
They are denying their potential, and they are perpetuating indirectly the view to the corporate world that, oh, women are career challenge. You employ them today, tomorrow they are not there. We really need to decide what roles we want to play as professionals, as entrepreneurs, so that we are all taken seriously and not create this, you know, half and half beliefs in the decision makers. Mm. They must know that if I employ Gugu, Gugu is going to be there. Yes, Gugu has a right to have, you know, family. By the way, as a company, we have one of the most wonderful working environment for our executives, particularly because most of them are women. So they know they can go and have those babies and juggle the time to come to the office and time to breastfeed. You can breastfeed during the board meeting. We are fine with that because we are all women. But the intention is to create that enabling environment for them as well, so that at no time you feel like you are compromising your family to your work, or you are compromising your work to your family.
You're able to incorporate.
You are able to incorporate and create an enabling, you know, working environment for them.
One of the aspects that is also repeated is that women working in the corporate space, when they take time out to have their children, and if they take an extended leave of absence, they struggle to get back into the corporate world because they have this perception that they're not going to stay, that they've been out of work for too long, and they're almost plateau on their careers, and it hinders them and it holds them back from moving forwards. But with your environment and your structure, I think that's very important.
Oh no, Gugu will go and have that baby. He will even ask her, when did you make this baby now? We're not, we didn't see this stomach. And she'll go deliver her baby, because delivering a baby does not render you incapable.
Yes, some people almost think of it as treat it as an illness.
It's not an illness.
It's a
as
state
soon
of
as
life.
That baby pops out, you are 100% fine, obviously, unless you had a Caesar, then you have to nurse that wound. But most of our girls say they will, because the baby also has to sleep. At some point when the baby is sleeping, they will come in the office to make sure that they don't plateau, they don't come back to the office and find out that, you know, they have missed out on what has been happening. They are able to do that.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band. Today we are talking to Wiphold founding members, Ms. Louisa Mojela, Group CEO of Wiphold, and Ms. Gloria Tomato Sirobe, Chief Executive Officer of WIP Capital. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, ladies, we're coming to the last part of the show. You have both achieved impeccable things during your careers. Are there any specific milestones that you have marked on your list of things to do that you want to accomplish in the business?
Yes, and this is the visible empowerment of rural women. And we are trying to address this through making sure that agro-industry
is one of our core focal area as a company and within the rural area, because that's where you find, you know, the women.
50% of our female population is rural. Yeah.
And they are sitting with the land that is underutilized.
So and you bring them an option to have a sustainable
element. And food security. No woman must go hungry.
Mm. And families.
And families, yes. You know, when you say woman, you know that the woman will look after everybody, family, men, dogs, and all. Everybody's taken care of.
And Ms. Sarabe, from your perspective?
Well, I think it's in that line with the attempt to convert that communal land to commercial land is very important. So as we do that agriculture emphasis and agro-processing attention to that, it is to leave these communities with a land which is now commercial. And I think if we achieve that, that empowerment is permanent, very permanent. We also, I've mentioned the cement industry. It is, we're building the plant now. It will be commissioned in 2015 sometime. It's very important for us that we get into that sector and have the impact that we think we can have, which is that it's not an exclusive industry. Same as agriculture, there's nothing that says only men can make it. So we have anxiety about the time in which this message is very clear, simply because we've been successfully operational in making it to work.
And also lastly, we continue to be accessible to these young women professionals and to their girl child, because there's a lot that they can also learn from us, you know, the challenges that we have gone through, the successes that we have gone through, the pitfalls and what to avoid and what, you know, to just go and grab. So that will continue, and mentor them and be accessible. So we are never too busy to hold the hand of a young one.
It's a very valuable contribution to be able to give back and nurture the youth that are coming through. And now in closing our discussion, what statement or words of hope would you like to pass on to women in Africa that are listening to the show?
My final contribution to the women of Africa is that we are all powerful, we are all bright women. Let us never be afraid to take the challenges ahead of us or in front of us and convert them into opportunities that can benefit us and our families and our communities.
I think for me, if we could just say that the whole world sees the continent as a place of opportunities, and if that is the case, it is the best time for women to place themselves in that space, because everybody is looking at the continent for opportunities. We have to see it as another form of activism, because in the end, we must be able to say the women in Africa have made it. It must not be one or two women. There must just be a mass of women who have made it in whatever way they have made it. We come from different backgrounds. But Africa is a place of opportunities, so the women must see it as a place of opportunities and place ourselves accordingly.
Thank you, Mrs. Majola and Mrs. Sorobe. It's been a pleasure having you here on our show today. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to Ms. Louisa Majola, Group CEO of Whiphold, and Ms. Gloria Sorobe, Chief Executive Officer of WIP Capital. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tune in next week when we talk to renowned South African swimmer, Natalie Detoy.